Consumer Affairs will come to order. Good morning, everyone. And we have a shorter schedule today, which is refreshing. Won't have to work quite as hard this morning. We're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 833A, and we'll have the staff read the summary. We have a bunch of people here who like this bill and nobody who doesn't like it, so good news.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 833A requires new rental housing receiving certain forms of federal or state funding for construction to incorporate design features to increase visibility by individual with mobility impairment, provides exceptions, and requires the Housing Community Services Department to consult with advocacy groups prior to adopting rules. Thank you.
And we'd like to welcome Senator Vicki Walker this morning.
Madam Chair, and can I invite John Van Landingham up here with me?
Absolutely.
He'll
welcome, John.
Explain the bill. Great. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Vicki Walker. I'm a state senator for District. Pulling pranks on your fellow members, are you, Representative Garrard? Of your usual tricks. I miss being over here at times. Let me tell you.
We really miss you too.
Thank you, Bill.
But we appreciate your office.
Thank you. Thank you very much for hearing this bill. This is something that we started last session with House Bill 2172, and it passed the Senate and installed in the House. And now we've passed in the Senate, and hopefully we're moving in the House. This bill is called visitability, and some of you were here last session and understand this concept, and I'll just enlighten those who are new to the process. This bill requires new rental housing constructed with federal and state funds administered by the Oregon Housing and Community Services Department to incorporate design features to increase visitability by individuals with mobility impairments. So what visitability means is that disabled folks really need to visit other people just like we do. They can't do that under normal circumstances when the housing is not built in such a way to accommodate them. Visitability will increase the supply of that kind of housing, and it does it in a very simple, small way, and I'm going to have John explain the details of the bill to you, but the general concept is to widen the door, to get into the home, have one, at least some main room accessible by an open doorway or a larger doorway, and have at least one bathroom on the premises to be able to be accessed by someone in a wheelchair. Now, we compromised on that issue. Last session, our bill required that you would be able to get your wheelchair completely in and turn around and do the things that you needed to do. And that, we met in a work group all during the interim with housing advocates, and that turned out to be a very expensive proposition in some of the types of housing that we build with public funds. And so we compromised by allowing the doorway to be large enough for a wheelchair to get into, but it can't turn around and do everything it needs to do. But a visitable home will also have all of the light switches, and et cetera, at a lower a level where someone in a wheelchair can access them, and just be generally a place where people can go and visit. We had a wonderful video last session, and I didn't want to take the time this session because we're also very busy at the end, but we had a video last session that explained how disabled advocates are not able to drink anything when they're visiting someone because they would fear that they would need to use the restroom and there'd be no way to get into it. They aren't able to get in to visit folks that they'd like to visit. And we have folks who are disabled advocates, and they're going to talk about their experiences. So I'm not going to share that because they can do it much better than I. And so at this time, I'd like John Van Landingham to take you through the bill and actually let you know how it works. And what I have done, you have in front of you a packet of housing that has been built to visitable standards. And so if someone says to you that, oh my goodness, when you do this, the housing won't look normal, it'll look different, I would say that that's not true. And you can see that by the types of housing that you'll see in the photographs here. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to John.
Morning.
Morning. Morning, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. Pretty. My name is John Van Landingham. I'm from Lane County Law and Advocacy Center, and I am Senator Walker's designated explainer to this bill. As she said, this bill was developed by a coalition in Lane County of disability advocates and affordable housing advocates. The disability advocates want access. The affordable housing advocates are concerned that visitability means more cost and some design restrictions. And so this bill is a compromise between those two interests. I'm an affordable housing advocate. Visitable basically means that someone in a wheelchair can get into the unit. It is different from the term accessible, which is a federal term and has greater requirements. It's a legal term. Essentially, what the bill does is require that any new rental housing, not homeownership housing, not acquisition, not rehabilitation, any new construction of rental housing only that is subsidized by money through the Oregon Housing and Community Services Department must be visitable. That's the only units that it applies to. Does not apply to private sector, single-family homeownership housing. Although in Lane County we've learned that home builders find this as a marketing strategy and may well implement it as a voluntary thing that they can do and market to people who want to age in place or have an elderly relative live with them. It requires six things. Visibility requires six things. First, it requires a visitable exterior route. So the entrance to a visitable entrance. So the entrance has to have no step. It has to be wide enough for a chair to get through. It has to have a level access or a ramp somehow to get up to it. Second thing is that it requires a visitable common living space. That could be a living room, it could be a kitchen, it could be a dining room, any of those. Third is it requires a visitable route from that front, that visitable door. The door doesn't have to be the front door, the exterior door. It could be a side door, a back door, garage door. It requires a visitable route from that visitable entrance to the visitable living space and to a first floor bathroom, outer room. The outer room has to have a visitable doorway, but as Senator Walker said, does not have to be wide enough for a wheelchair to get in and maneuver around. And that was very closely negotiated by the work group. The disability advocates would clearly prefer to have a visitable bathroom, but that adds probably $3,000 to $5,000 per unit to the cost of the unit. And that was more than the affordable housing advocates could accept. So we compromised. And part of the compromise is that for every project of at least 20 units or projects that have community rooms, and many of the projects funded through the state have community rooms that are used for various things such as child care, education programs, work programs throughout the state. If the project has a community room or is more than 20 units, we're requiring at least one publicly accessible, fully accessible, and the term accessible, bathroom. And then the last thing, as Senator Walker mentioned, is the light switch. The environmental controls have to be reachable from a chair. The last point to make to you is that we've built into the bill some exceptions that will be applied by Housing and Community Services Department, Mr. Repine's office, in funding these projects. If a project makes a compelling case to HCS that it cannot meet the visibility standards because of one of these four factors, then HCS has authority to waive the requirement of visibility. And those factors are topography of the site, for example, if it's steeply sloped, community and design standards, undue costs, or conflicting public funder requirements. For example, if the project has some money from Farmers Home, what used to be Farmers Home, now Rural Development, that gets in the way of visibility, then HCS can make an exception. That's what this bill does. Thank you.
And Jim, as I understand it, it does not increase square footage of the complex. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, it does not because of the bathroom, because we're not requiring a visitable bathroom. That's the major compromise that the disability advocates made to the affordable housing advocates. Okay. But you're right.
Did you have a question? I did.
So you that sparks another question. You're saying that it does not require a bathroom?
Does not require, I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Representative Kitts, it does not require a visitable bathroom. It does require a bathroom on the first floor. So for townhouse, I mean, most apartments are one floor, many floors.
Right.
Many apartments are just one floor. In Lane County, we have typically built townhouses. The because they blend better with the neighborhood. We've got a lot of reasons why we want them to fit in. But if it's a townhouse, the developer will have to build a bathroom on the first floor. HCS and lenders already are encouraging that anyway.
Right. So on section 2, line 23, when it refers to powder room, is that not a bathroom, or is it?
Madam Chair, Representative Kitts, powder room is intended to be a toilet and a sink, and it's not required to be large enough for a wheelchair to enter or maneuver. So the key is the size,
okay.
as the Chair indicated with her question. The work group had two architects and a designer, and we went through this by design with diagrams showing how a chair would fit or not fit. So the bathroom is not big enough for a chair to get in.
Okay. Follow up, actually, my original question. There would be no increased cost, would there, if these standards were incorporated in the design, because you're not expanding the total square footage. You're simply altering how the square footage within the existing or within the structure would be placed. Is that?
Representative Kitts, we went through each of the criteria that we're requiring here and tried to cost them out with the architects. Our best guess is that doors do not cost maybe $5 more if you know about in advance and you're building new construction, so you do. The ramp may cost some more, making a site level where there's some concern about having flat units in an Oregon environment where it tends to rain a lot. But the doorways don't cost any more. The environmental controls, the light switches don't cost any more. The ramp may cost some more, but it was a cost that the affordable housing advocates felt they could carry.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Other questions?
Madam Chair, if I might just add a couple things that John brought up. The Lane County Home Builders, the disability advocates have gone before the Lane County Home Builders, and they'll talk to you about that. And they're very excited about adapting some of these ideas into the private home market. And in fact, they had a visitable home on the Lane County tour of homes in the last go-round. And I think people are really starting to look at that. I know my own father-in-law, when he was disabled and became even more disabled as he became ill, and there were a lot of design changes we had to do to his home and to our home. And if we just think about those ahead now when we're building our homes, especially as baby boomers, because we're a huge part of the market, we just think about that in advance, and they're very simple, simple things that don't cost extra. And as John mentioned, the door, the extra wide door, is minimal, minimal cost. And builders don't even look at that because the cost is so minimal. And so I think it's neat that we're trying this out with some public housing where a lot of our disabled citizens live. And I just think it'd be a great thing that if we could do this all around the state. But this is a good place to start. And I do want to thank very much Bob Repine and the Housing and Community Services. They have been so awesome working with us on this bill last session and this session, as well as John Van Landingham and the Senior and Disabled Advocates in Lane County.
Thank you very much, Vicki. I know you put a lot of time and effort into this, and I thank you for it.
You're welcome. Thank you. I'll run back up to my other committee now.
Sure.
We don't have a quorum.
Well, we're happy to help you out.
Thank you.
Let's call Bob Repine up so in case the committee has some technical questions. I'd also like to call Ed Necker and Kathy Jenis. And Mr. Repine is also the former chair of Ways and Means, so if you have any of those questions, I'm sure he'd be happy to answer those.
My knowledge of what's going on this year is not going to be served by what I learned in the years I was here.
We'll try not to hold that against
me. I'm chair, committee members. Good morning. I'm Bob Repine, director of Oregon Housing Community Services, here to speak in favor of Senate Bill 833. I think Senator Walker and Mr. Van Landingham did a good job of portraying the intent of the legislation. Again, just to reiterate a couple of points, we did work with them during the interim. This was I thought a fascinating topic last session to the extent that we encouraged our applicants for the last 2 years to consider visitability as something that they might design into their buildings. And just with that minor consideration, which means a thought process, instead of just going ahead doing things the normal way, just take a moment and figure out if visibility works. We were able to, in the years 2002 projects that we funded under the same criteria that you're assessing as far as funding vis-a-vis state monies or federal dollars, of the 1,864 units that were completed in the year 2002, 290 were required to be accessible units, meeting the ADA requirements. In addition to that, we increased another 507 units that were considered to be visitable. So even just having people take a moment to figure out whether or not the visitability could work in their development stage bought us 500 more units. Now, the question is, of the 1,800 in total that was built, how many more could we have gotten? And that's what the emphasis behind this bill is try to, you know, work with our applicants on their projects and their designs to see what we can do to help facilitate accessibility. So I think it's worked, and we do have demonstration in the 2 years. We thought it was important to try to demonstrate if this bill was to come back. Was there a sense of ownership, and was there a sense of interest by people wanting to do this? And there was. The costs, again, are pretty inconsequential. They are minimum to the extent that the doors don't price out much difference between a 2/8 door to a 3/0 door. Again, I think Mr. Van Lanahan is correct in saying that probably the biggest issue that one would have to deal with is the access via the ramping if there's an elevation change to the front door. And I think that's where the piece comes in, where we have the authority through administrative rules to work with the applicant to try to define or design things that maybe would work. We have two architects on board that work with our applications initially up front, and so, which is an advantage also, as they're working with the applicant and their architects, we're able to talk about visitability and the particular characteristics of the lay of the land. So placement of buildings versus community room versus parking lot are all taken in consideration at the time of the drawings being developed. And so, again, just in that, in the south, you probably could make more visible units because you're not putting you can put anything just about anywhere, but if you put it in the right sequence, you can probably maximize the use of the land the way it is formed to make sure it works with the units. So we're real pleased with this. We think it's an absolute good idea. Aging is an issue that we all face, and people with disabilities have been facing it a lot longer than us. There's no reason why we shouldn't do this. And then just as a final note, I saw an email that I received from the National Home Builders, and they actually are starting to offer a new certified program for builders to learn the specialty arts of accessibility and senior construction. So I'm assuming, I haven't read the excerpt of what that includes, but the certified program by the National Home Builders to deal with this specific population tells me that these type of issues would be part of the curriculum to let builders know that it's not going to do anybody good if they can't get through the front door. And so that's kind of the basic starting point, I think, of visibility, and I think that's why it's a good bill.
Thank you, Bob. Representative Shoffman, and then Representative Gerard.
Thank you. I don't know how many times I've moved or had to pack a water heater. I just took a water heater into my house this over Christmas vacation, and if I had a couple more inches on that door,
right,
I could have got that. No one was home, fortunately, but our ears would have been burning. Mm-hmm. I got it in there, but this accessibility isn't just about visitability or wheelchairs. This is how many times do we haul a couch in and out of a house? I framed out my share of doors. This is easy to do, and the cost, I can't. If you're framing up a wall, it's just a matter of where you put the 2x4s.
Right.
I mean, this is not. That I don't understand personally, but I can't believe there isn't a market out there for everybody to have more access. And as far as ramping the sidewalk up to the front door, you just need a grade to keep the water out. It's not that complicated. I do this all the time, and I love living in a ranch house because I've lived on houses where I had a flight of stairs. I had to pack my groceries and everything up and down every day. So I can't believe everybody wouldn't be interested in this kind of design. So my question is there a market out there outside of visitability and wheelchair access?
Madam Chair, Representative, as I indicated, the National Home Builders are now starting to offer the certified program to certified builders in this more expertise of construction. And, I've been working relative to the aging population and the baby boomers, and it's a real number that's going to face all of us sooner or later, that much of our housing stock will not be very adaptable or practical for us to live in. And so I think as time goes on, you heard Mr. Van Lanham talk about the builders in the Eugene area are building it in as a marketing tool. Mm-hmm. Building industry, as you well know, will do just about anything if they know there's a market for it. And until there's that market, they usually don't move on it. But once there's a market identified that will either enhance the sale or the profitability of those sales, they generally will find a way to facilitate and build it into the designs. And so I agree with you. It's probably something that should have been done a long time ago, but it's here now, and I think it's good that it's here now.
And Representative Byrd.
Bob, just to get a handle on the impact of this bill, what percentage of new rental housing construction receives federal or state funding?
Madam Chair, Representative, again, if you think about it in the microcosm of our agency, a typical, as I mentioned to you before, we will have funded, in the year 2002, we funded a little over 1,800 units, multifamily units. That's a typical volume of business that we'll do in my agency using these resources. How that plays out against the whole marketplace, private builds, market rate, everything else that's being built, I would suspect we're probably less than 5% or 10% of the market. So a significant large part of the market is being built without this. But I think it behooves us to sometimes be able to lead an industry to show them that this is something they should be considering also.
Would this have a negative impact in that regard to new construction?
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't think it has a negative impact in any way that I can imagine. I was trying to relate it to things that I remember in my career as a building contractor that came about initially, and one would think that they have negative impacts because it's just doing something different. What comes to mind is some of the energy codes that Oregon has adopted over the period of time, why we had to have more constraint or difficult energy codes, but the reality was that it was measurable and defensible, that it was a good investment for the time versus the cost of the energy. So I think you could probably do a pretty easy rationale of whether or not you put a door wide enough or not wide enough with no extra cost. Is it bring value to the end user over a longer period of time in these designs? And I would say yes, it does. So I don't see it has any negative sides.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. We're going to go to Ed and Kathy. I'd also like to call up Ellen Bombero. And we have about 10 minutes more on this bill, so about 2 minutes apiece.
Who do you want first?
Go ahead, Ed. You're on.
Well, as soon as I make room for Kathy, I will be on.
I'm not moving.
Oh, I mean, Ellen, excuse me. Okay, well, now, it has often been said to me, I've spent my time up here in Salem, it has often been said that the important thing is to put a face on the issue. Were you looking at it? My parents lived in a ranch home, two-level home, two steps to the front door. I was living in a residential care facility. Now, I have written testimony for you. I don't know who to give it to.
Oh,
okay.
We'll get it for you.
I encourage you to read it because it's slightly different from what I faxed to you. And those of you that received, now Representative Kitt and Merkley, I believe you received it. I think I gave it to you Friday. Anyway, I was a part of the work group that dealt with the building advocates. And I would like to say that giving up an accessible bathroom was a bitter pill to swallow. Just having a door, Representative Kitt, just having, the only difference in the bathroom is having a wider door. There is no cost difference, or $20, or whatever, I don't know. I don't know what else to say, except that we did present this idea to the for-profit home builders. They want to use this idea in their tour of homes this August. They want to collaborate with the advocates on the piece for their brochure. They want to use it as a selling point. is embraced in other parts of the country, in other nations. Oregon is generally considered to be on the forefront of many issues. I think it's time that we take that incentive. Representative Shuffle, you seem quite cognizant of the building aspects, and yes, wider doors do make a difference when you're trying to get a water heater in. It is a selling point. The not-for-profit building industry was concerned with having an accessible bathroom, adding square footage, the cost issue, solid. So our compromise on the bathroom design was, as I say, a bitter pill to swallow. But we swallowed them. This bill is much more, as you have seen, there are advocates of this bill, but I don't think there are any opponents. It's written much better than the last bill. All right? Don't tell Senator Walker I said that.
I think she'd agree.
With that, I will pass. With that, I will open for questions. Are there any questions?
I think we'll do our panel in the interest of time first before we go to questions. Mm-hmm. Kathy?
All right, I'm just going to read what I have to say, just for expediency's sake. My name is Catherine Jeunesse, Madam Chair and committee members, and I live in Lowell, which is a rural community, or a rural town in Lane County. And I serve as a volunteer member of the Lane County Council of Governments Disability Services Advisory Council. That's a lot of words. And I also chair the Special Transportation Advisory Council in Lane County, and I'm also a member of the Lane Independent Living Alliance. And I ask that you support the Senate Bill 833 out of your committee with a due pass recommendation. Visitability is a residential housing concept that incorporates minor housing modifications for wheelchair users to be able to access the homes of others. The cost of such modifications is minimal and well under $1,000 per unit. Also, visitability has become a worldwide movement stretching as far as the United Kingdom. What does the lack of visitability mean to me? An outstanding example in my life has been when my daughter, Kristen, had her graduation party at her stepmother's, and there were stairs to hoist me and my scooter up a whole flight of stairs. And then there was the powder room accessibility that my daughter was very gracious, of course, in assisting me with. My daughter, who has accompanied me today, has an apartment that I can access. It's, there's no step for me to get through, and the doorway is wide enough. However, I run into a barrier in the restroom, in the powder room, rather. And I have actually fallen in attempting to access her bathroom independently without her help. So lack of visitability to me is an ongoing nuisance, at least. And I thank you for your time and your consideration.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And thank you for all your hard work. I know it's a lot of committee meetings.
it was a worthwhile workshop that we worked on for months and months and months.
Well, if you'll pass this bill onto the floor, it will have made it worthwhile.
Okay. You're a good salesman. Ellen.
And thank you so much for hearing this bill. I wanted to say it was hard to get the bathroom issue, and I wanted to lock everybody into a room, feed them salty food, lots of drinks, and not let them out for 6 hours. But, you know, they wouldn't go for it. What can I tell you? But I wanted to say that you had asked about, there is a housing development that went on in, outside of Atlanta, totally visitable, and it wasn't marketed as visitable, and it sold instantly. People liked the aspect of moving in where they could move in their furniture, move in their appliances, kids with strollers, visiting grandparents, or, you know, whatever. It went, the marketplace just ate it up without realizing that, you know, I mean, it wasn't just for the disabled. And I do experience a lot of, you know, problems with, like you say, visibility, because not being able to visit friends unless they've modified their home personally, which is at a great expense, and things like this. It really is hard, so I really appreciate you hearing us, and I will make it short because I've already turned in my testimony also. So thank you so much for giving us a hearing.
Well, thank you so much, Pam. Mm-hmm. We appreciate it.
And I forgot to say thank you, too.
You're welcome. Okay, we'll go to Phyllis Rand and Ted Stevens. Morning.
Good morning. Phyllis Rand with the Governor's Commission on Senior Services. I'm the legislative coordinator for the commission, and I'm here today because we are in support of Senate Bill 833. We've really covered a lot of the issues this morning, and I'm not going to repeat them, but I just want to emphasize the importance of people being able to visit and having the being able to get into the home and being able to participate with members of your family and friends. One of the things that we find difficult for seniors and persons with disabilities is isolation. And this issue is very important because visitability, which is kind of a tongue twister, is such a step to helping people feel involved and helping them visit with their family and friends. It's also going to be an important issue with the baby boomers and for aging in place. So with that, I'll say this is good public policy. We hope you'll pass it as soon as possible. And thank you for letting me testify today. And if you have any questions, I'll be very happy to answer them.
Well, thank you, Phyllis. You certainly project the zeal that you have for seniors, and I appreciate all your work.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ted Stevens. I'm the Director of Senior and Disabled Services with Lane Council of Governments. We're the Area Agency on Aging and Disability Services for Lane County, and I'm also the current president of the Oregon Association of Area Agencies on Aging and Disabilities. All of the points that I really wanted to make this morning have already been covered by the other people, and I know time is short. I just do want to urge you very much to have a work session on this bill and to give it a due pass recommendation to the House. I think, as Phyllis just indicated, it is good public policy at an affordable price. Really, the cost is very small in terms of if you think about this from the get-go, in terms of developing units that meet the requirements, it does, as Phyllis indicated, it does promote socialization for people with disabilities, and it also, as a secondary benefit, helps with aging in place. And so I hope that you will favorably consider this. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, that concludes our testimony on Senate Bill 833A. I'm going to close the public hearing, and I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 833A. Representative Kitts.
Madam Chair, I would move Senate Bill 833A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Kitts moves Senate Bill 833A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. Votes aye. Motion carries. And Representative Schaffler, I think that you should carry this bill and tell your concrete stories.
Well, I would love to.
Are you willing to do that?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Okay, we'll close the work session. Thank you, everybody, for coming. We know it's not easy for you to get here, so we appreciate it. Okay, we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 34A. Have the staff read the summary. Welcome Ruth Simonis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Senate Bill 34A exempts specified persons who may be engaged in professional real estate activity from requirement to obtain real estate license. Applies to specified persons performing real estate activity on or after July 1, 2002 and declares the emergency effective on passage. And we have some dash 4 amendments today that are passed out separate from the packet to address some concerns that I believe the bankers have. Thank you.
Welcome, Ruth.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ruth Simonis, and I'm a practitioner with the Elder Law Section of the Oregon State Bar. And I work predominantly with elders and seniors. And we had Senate Bill 446 from the 2001 legislative session brought to light an inadvertent oversight. A lot of the planning we do with elderly families is to be able to prepare necessary estate planning documents that assist them and their children to conduct their affairs in the event of incapacity or disability. With the real estate revamping of the real estate licensing laws, the inadvertent consequence was that it's kind of scooped up a lot of our caregiving families so that they are now hundreds of Oregonians out there in violation of the Oregon real estate licensing laws by helping out their families in either selling or leasing or renting property. The mom moves into a nursing home or they have to sell something. So we got together with the Oregon Real Estate Agency and kind of created an exception for immediate family members so they wouldn't have to become licensed real estate agents in order to carry on the plans of their parents or our family members. So what you see in front of you, Senate Bill 34, is basically change to that particular section of the real estate licensing laws. It allows for an exception to immediate family members. It also allows for an exception for paid fiduciaries. There are a number of elderly senior Oregonians who have no family, and it enables a privately paid fiduciary to make the necessary referral to a licensed real estate agent to be able to act on their behalf. And I believe the other changes were proffered by the Oregon Bankers Association that would effectively exempt them from certain licensing requirements as well. And we've gone through subsequent amendments, which you'll see in front of you, I think, dash 3. And I believe you even have a hand-engrossed amendment from the Oregon Bankers Association exempting trust companies.
We have the A4. Is that the one that you're looking at?
Madam Chair, I believe so. Actually, Madam Chair, what I have is 34-3 and a copy of the amendment, which would be what I received from.
Okay, I saw Tim. Are you
on the?
We have no A3.
That might be what we passed on.
Okay, all right. Is Tim Martinez? I saw him zip in and zip out. So
he zipped.
We'll call him forward, too. Okay, why don't you tell us what the amendment does?
The amendment that is offered by the Oregon Bankers Association is essentially exempts the banks, the trust company, trust banking portion of the bank, from requiring their bankers' staff to have real estate licenses. Actually, probably Tim Martinez can explain that a little bit better than I did.
Sure.
They kind of piggyback on our bill, saying, good bill, good change, we'd like to add some, too.
I see.
Brian DeMarco from the Oregon Real Estate Agency is here as well. If you have any questions directed towards that,
okay,
you might be able to answer them a little more specifically.
Okay, Ruth, I guess I just want to clarify. If you have an elderly parent and you go to sell their home, is that legal in Oregon right now to sell your parents' home?
Assuming you have the proper authority to do so, assuming that you have the correct estate planning documents, power of attorney that authorize specific activities such as selling real estate, then yes, you can.
So you would need power of attorney?
Correct.
Even if your mother or father was asking you to do that for them?
My understanding is that in order to be able to go through a title company, that sort of thing, and I mean, they could get permission, but usually they even like a specific specified power of attorney for the purpose of this particular transaction if they're not the actual ones doing the signing.
I see. And so if the parent can sign, then it isn't required? Is that correct?
I'm sorry. If the parent can sign, then the power of attorney is not required. That would be my understanding, yes.
Okay. Yes. Representative Kitts.
Does an executor of a will cover this? I mean, would that, if you were the executor of a will and were responsible for the estate of the deceased in this case, would that then cover this, or would it again have to be specified that it needs to be for the purpose of?
Madam Chair, Representative Kitts, if you're an executor of a will, this would not really come into play. The power of attorney ceases upon death.
Okay.
And so that person would have the authority granted under them as an executor, just under the normal probate laws.
Okay.
Other questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
He's not here. And the mortgage bankers are here as well. Could you come forward and just... Who do we have? Anybody?
Okay.
Real estate. Okay. All right. All right. Well, that concludes our testimony on Senate Bill 34A. So, okay, we have the -4 amendment, which clarifies the power of attorney and inserts a date. Define some terms. Are there further questions? Okay. Representative Kitts. Oh, I'm sorry. We're closing the public hearing on Senate Bill 34A, opening a work session on Senate Bill 34A.
Madam Chair.
Kitts.
I would move House Bill 34A as amended.
Move
the -4s first?
Yes.
Madam Chair, I would move the -4s into House Bill 34A.
Representative Kitts moves the -4 amendment into Senate Bill 34A. Is there discussion? Kitts.
Madam Chair, I would move Senate Bill 34A as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Kitts moves Senate Bill 34A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. Well, it's aye. Motion carries. Representative Rosenbaum, would you chair the bill?
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
Close the work session on Senate Bill 34. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 252B. Call Carl Lundberg and Louis Littleholz of the Insurance Division. Have the staff read the summary.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 252B modifies provisions regarding expense insurers, makes minor modifications to insurance code, allows appointment of insurance commissioner to serve under supervision and control of the director of DCBS. Thank you.
Morning.
Morning. Chair Close, members of the committee. My name is Carl Lundberg. I'm the Deputy Insurance Administrator for the Department of Consumer and Business Services. I'm here on behalf of Joel Ariel, the Administrator, to ask your support for Senate Bill 252 being engrossed. This bill addresses various insurance issues and clarifies existing regulatory powers. The Insurance Division worked with insurance companies, insurance agents, and organizations, and other interested parties to develop this bill. There are six changes that are made, and there's one amendment. I'll explain these as I go along. First is the applicability of insurance holding company requirements to healthcare service contractors. And this basically just makes the healthcare service contractors subject to the same regulations that the insurers are. The second piece has to do with the designation of the insurance commissioner title. And this particular piece of the bill is just clarifying existing law. Currently, the commissioner has, the director of the department has all kinds of authority to delegate various duties, but it isn't clear from the statute whether or not the director can delegate the title of commissioner, and this just merely explains that if she so desires to do so, that she can delegate this title.
The next piece has to do with recording of complaints. Currently, the insurance division is required to record each written and signed complaint received. This bill just makes it legislative direction to continue to record these bills, record all of the complaints, and directs us to record and maintain the complaints without regard to the method in which they are communicated. The fourth section deals with the timeline to review acquisitions and mergers. Currently, different timelines apply for review and approval of acquisitions and mergers of insurers and other affiliates in an insurance holding company, depending on whether the transaction involves a financial holding company established under the Federal Graham Leach Bliley Act. The proposed change will apply the same timeline for all such transactions because there's no reason to preserve the current distinction. The fifth section deals with the application of standardized statutory accounting principles. In the prior legislative session, this was done to be to standardize and certain the accounting principles, but there was a mistake made when it was done and it was put into the part of the law that requires deals with forms. This merely removes it from that part of the law and standardizes it for the process. The sixth section deals with exempt insurers. Certain associations that provide limited insurance products to members have been allowed to be established and to continue in business with only minimal compliance requirements of the insurance code, as long as those entities hold a certificate of exemption issued by the insurance division. Most of these companies are gone now. Only three Oregon exempt insurers and a handful of exempt insurers from out of the state remain. There's no reason to insure to issue certificates of exemption to new entities in the future. It is proposed that the authority to obtain the exemption be repealed, except that existing exempt companies will be allowed to continue their existence. The last piece deals with the healthcare service contractors. And this is the amendment. We ask you to consider the amendment to the bill that will delete one of the proposed changes affecting healthcare service contractors. The change would make healthcare service contractors subject to the same statutory standards governing investments in subsidiaries that apply to insurers generally. Concerns were raised with us as to the clarity of those standards as they would apply to healthcare service contractors. The amendment deletes the language in the bill so that we may resolve the concerns in the next interim. I request that the committee move this bill with the amendments to the House floor with a D-pass recommendation. Are there any questions?
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for bringing this bill. It looks like these are some needed changes, and I see that one of the purposes of the bill is to conform with federal law in some respects. And I know that there have recently been some federal rulings dealing with insurance plans that provide coverage for prescriptions that don't cover certain kinds of prescriptions. Would this have any effect on that, do you know?
Representative Close, Representative, this would not have any effect at all on that.
Okay, thanks.
Well, thank you for this summary. It was very easy to follow you with the numbers that you had, so appreciate that. It's a complicated subject. So. Are there any other questions? Thank you very much. So we will close. Lewis, did you want to speak?
Madam Chair, I have nothing to add.
You have a question? Okay. All right. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 252B. Open a work session on Senate Bill 252B.
Madam Chair,
Representative Kitts.
I would move Senate Bill 252B to the floor with the D-pass recommendation. Oh, I'll move the dash threes first, I think. Senate Bill 252.
Representative Kitts moves the dash three amendment into Senate Bill 252B. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Kitts.
Madam Chair, I would move Senate Bill 252B as amended to the House floor with a D-pass recommendation.
Representative Kitts moves Senate Bill 252B as amended to the floor with a D-pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
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 No.
Aye.
Aye.
Votes no and serves notice of a possible minority report.
Chair close.
Votes aye. Motion carries. Representative Garrard, will you carry the bill?
Yes, ma'am.
Close the work session on Senate Bill 252B. Okay. Some paper rustling here. And we're going to a work session on House Bill 2577. Have the staff read the summary. Call Bill Penhollow forward and Kim Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2577 originally directs Economic and Community Development Department and Oregon Department of Administrative Services to provide assistance in developing plans to relate to advanced telecommunications infrastructure and broadband services, modify service telecommunications coordinating council. You have a dash four amendment that just came in this morning that's passed out separate from your packet that replaces the bill, although it still deals with the same issues. Sets forth a policy in the legislatures on the telecommunications. It has requirements for the PUC on reporting of telecommunications infrastructure, increases the council's membership, and modifies the council's membership. Addresses some issues of funding and requires agencies to assist councils in its functions. And it gives the council a number of charges that it is supposed to pursue. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Bill Penhollow, representing the Association of Oregon Counties, and today providing staff assistance to the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council. With me today is Kim Hoffman, a member of the Oregon Telecommunications Council. We would like to present to you the Dash 4 amendments. As you may recall, when 2577 was initially heard, there were several issues raised in that initial hearing. Since that time, we have worked with interested parties, the Oregon Telecommunications Association, other interested parties, with legislators that have provided us input. And Madam Chair, as your committee administrator has indicated, the Dash 4 amendments replace what was originally in 2744 if the 2577 if the committee adopts the amendment. And it takes 2577 from a bill of some 24 sections, which we thought were good ideas, and narrows it down, eliminates the objections, and now I think we're down to 6 sections. Madam Chair, if you desire, I would be happy to walk the committee member through the sections that have been retained. Your
might
committee administrator basically identified those. Let me do this quickly then. Section 1, Madam Chair, members of the committee, deal with a policy statement by the Oregon legislature that...
Excuse me, Bill, just a minute.
Yes.
You're on the Dash 4s, right?
Yes.
And we are eliminating the Dash 1s, or are we including them as well?
No. The Dash 4s will replace, supersede the previous amendments.
Thank you.
So Section 1 deals with legislative assembly finding and declaring a policy to encourage the development and the deployment of broadband telecommunications services across the state of Oregon. Talks about how this may be achieved by expanding broadband services, creating incentives, Madam Chair, undertaking planning at the state, regional, and local level to encourage and work together on the deployment of broadband to unserved and underserved areas across the state. Section 2 adds a provision to the reporting requirements of the Public Utility Commission. The commission is required annually to report to the governor and the legislature on matters associated with the Federal Telecommunications Act of 1996. The provision that would be added here would be to identify the number of public bodies providing basic telecommunications infrastructure so that public entities may take advantage of those of that infrastructure in providing information and communication services. Section 3 extends the Oregon Telecommunication Council for an additional 2 years. It was organized by or created by the legislature in the last session, and members of the council feel that there's additional work that needs to be done, additional information that needs to be brought forward to the governor and to the legislature. It increases the size of the council to provide for a broader representation on the council. We have worked in these amendments, Madam Chair, to remove any fiscal impacts that may that was previously identified in the original version of 2577, so that there is no requirements. The council is seeking grants and gifts and donations, and we'll use those funds to provide for staff support. You'll note in the amendments that the council has for the past 2 years and will continue to provide its own expenses in traveling and meeting periodically to carry out the responsibilities. Section 4 extends the 2001 Act to January 2nd of 2006, and the last section, Section 5, basically prescribes the effective date. I'd be happy to, yes, Ms. Hoffman and I would be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Let's go to Kim, and then we'll go to questions.
I don't have a lot to add, except that the council members do believe strongly that if we can have another couple of years to do our work, that we can assist Oregon in advancing telecommunications throughout the state to the rural areas, which is really critical for providing a lot of the kinds of services that we want to provide in education, health care, and other areas. So we would just ask for your consideration of that.
Okay. Other questions? Representative Gallegos.
Yeah, thank you for coming. I have a question. It's on page 6 of the dash 4, lines 16 or 6 through 11. And just reading that, you're directing all state agencies are then directed to assist this council as the council sees fit, basically. And I'm concerned at what you're asking state agencies to do.
Madam Chair, Representative Gallegos. Section 14 is actually a revision of the section above, the previous section 11, which had directed agencies to provide assistance in this process. Basically, that has been in the form of providing information and, on occasion, a testimony before the Oregon Telecommunications Council. I don't believe that there's any intent of going beyond that, just to provide for a coordination with state agencies.
Madam Chair, Representative Gallegos, I will support what Bill just said. What we're really asking for is just continued collaboration with state agencies so that we understand what they're doing, and we can integrate that into what we're doing. That's basically what we're asking for.
Representative Merklin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But could this section be interpreted to direct agencies of state government to provide staff support, printing support, so on and so forth, since it's not really clear that consultation is what you're seeking?
Madam Chair, Representative Merkley, that is not, and maybe for the record, that is not the intent of Section 14. If I could take you back to Section 11 on page 5, lines 14 through 18. This section was amended to make certain that there would be no fiscal responsibility on behalf of the state to support this council. That combined with Section 15, it was desired that the council would qualify for grants and funding assistance from state, federal, or local government agencies, and with those resources, then if there were costs incurred, the costs would be covered by funds available to the council. There was also in the original bill a provision directing OECDD to provide staff assistance, and that has been removed. So we have attempted to, in these amendments, say that there is no fiscal responsibility or administrative responsibility on the part of the state to provide support and assistance unless there are funds available to the council that can cover the cost of the agencies.
Thank you.
Representative Kitts.
Madam Chair, are we in work session?
Yes, we are.
Madam Chair, I would move the dash 4 amendments into House Bill 2577.
Representative Kitts moves the dash 4 amendment into House Bill 2577. Is there discussion? Representative Merkley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it clear to the committee that the previous objections that have been raised by people who testified are all, everyone's happy now, everyone's in concert?
No one has signed up.
My understanding.
We didn't put a sign up stamp.
Let's say that I will be supporting this bill, and I appreciate the clarification on Section 14, and just repeating it for the record that this does not direct agencies of the state government to provide staff except under the aforestated Section 11 conditions, or Section 3 sub 11. Anyway,
Brad, did you want to comment since you were signed up originally?
No, I'm not.
All right. That was the opposition that you had, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Other discussion? Okay. Is there objection to the dash 4s? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Kitts.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2577 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means with the yes recommendation.
Representative Kitts moves House Bill 2577 as amended to Ways and Means with a do pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative
Daggett?
Aye.
Representative
Burrow?
Aye.
Representative
Berkeley? Aye.
Representative
Chalkman?
Aye. Aye. Votes aye. Motion carries. And okay. Bill 2577 moves on. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3528 and have the staff refresh our memory on this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 3528 provides that amounts collected as public purpose charges for retail electricity consumers on or after the effective date of this act before January 1, 2008 be paid into the general fund, and it eliminates the public purpose charge January 1, 2008. And this has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay, and the purpose of having this work session is to move this to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. So, Representative Gallegos.
Madam Chair, to make a motion?
Yes.
I'd like to move House Bill 3528 to the Committee on Ways and Means with no recommendation.
Representative Gallegos moves House Bill 3528 to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means without recommendation. Discussion. Representative Gerard.
Madam Chair, I will give this a courtesy vote to get it to Ways and Means for Representative Gallegos.
Okay. Representative Merkley.
Madam Chair, thank you. Since my colleague has the votes she needs, I'm going to vote no to signal my concerns about the bill and my apologies. Oh.
Thank you. So noted. Representative Schaffler and Representative Rosenblatt. Okay. Without further discussion, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
No.
No.
Aye.
No. Both sides. Motion carries. House Bill 3528 moves to Ways and Means, closing the work session. And is there anything else for the good of the committee? Thank you, everyone. We are very protective.